So our next speaker is Monica Carrigan. She's the Vice President for Innovations at Jipaigu, and she's leading a multidisciplinary team that's looking at novel solutions that will leverage the power of innovations to accelerate progress in preventing needless deaths, among the world's most vulnerable women, girls, and their families. Many of us know Monica well. She's a pioneering leader and expert in family planning, maternal health, sexual and reproductive health and rights. Previously, she was at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and played a key role, as many of us know, in the London Summit on Family Planning in 2012. Monica, welcome. Hand it over to you.
Thank you, sir. Hi, good afternoon, everyone, and just thank you for being here. I'm so impressed by the number of people in the room, but also the people online, and I want to give a big shout out to Vishwajit, who is in India, and a number of other colleagues around the globe. Also a big shout out to our distinguished panel. And I want to thank Nick. I met Nick many years ago, and again, we're here to talk about innovation. Innovation happens when there are pioneers that stick with it. And if you, had an opportunity to visit the Jacaranda at the beginning, it's changed, and it's part of prototyping and adapting and willingness to look at what you're doing well and to continue to do it. And I just want to give you a big shout out. I think a lot of people are really super excited about your business model and what you're doing. I also want to say that I think this is an important time for our community to come together. Next week, we have the UN General Assembly meeting. We're all going to be looking at ways to meet the SDG goals for mothers and newborns, also looking at better ways to reach out to young people. And I just want to keep that in mind as we look at innovations, because for me, innovations is all about bending the curve. And I want to talk a little bit about that. One of the things when we think about accelerating progress, I think we all have to look at, what are those ambitious, audacious, somewhat hairy goals out there? And how can we, each one of us, be a part of the change process that needs to happen? And, so many of us are asked to help meet those goals, but also to look at coverage and quality and equity. These are tough issues. And I want to just put that on the table. When we think about innovations and we think about serving the most vulnerable populations, I think we have to give ourselves credit and also take a step back and say how important it is to look at where we want to be in the future. And we're not going to be there today. And that's part of innovations. It's part of prototyping, adapting, and using data. And I'm hoping that a couple of the three stories that I tell that will come across. Innovations has the power to produce more positive outcomes to reach more people. Let's think about it. Faster, better, more affordably, and sustainably. So when we look at it, innovations, and Nick hit a couple of nails on the head. It's all about new business processes, operational models, policy breakthroughs, new products. Like, how do we think about innovations not just in one box, but in many boxes across a critical path for the populations that we want to serve? And I for these pictures here, I just want to highlight in 2014, and thanks to USAID and a number of donors, they put together a grand challenge for Ebola. And at that grand challenge, there was 100 people. In those 100 people, there were some experts on infection prevention, but there are also some like and unlike minds, one of them being a seamstress. And I want to say it's been an opportunity to see this prototyping happening. So one is they met at the Center for Bioengineering and Design. We also worked with the Johns Hopkins, biocontainment unit, and a number of partners. And they developed an Ebola suit. They went out and tested the Ebola suit in Guinea. And I had the great honor to be at Hopkins when DuPont recently came to meet with the biocontainment unit, who wants to buy the suit. And they're just doing the last changes to the suit. But a lot had to do, and that it started in 2014. Here we are in 2017. So it took 3 years that the suit has been tested at DuPont. And it's so exciting. But you have to, when we think about innovations, we think about change, they happen over time, and they happen because of a committed group of partners. Let's look at some of the guiding principles. And I love this one. And I always have to remind myself and everyone else, Can we fall in love with the problem before we just jump into doing things? So how do we think about that problem, the barriers to women or girls or youth trying to get our services? How do we design with the end user in mind? How do we use data to adjust and change our program and iterate? And how do we learn from our successes and fail fast? And I think that has been one of the biggest challenges, and I want to own that challenge for us, and I want to put that out there as one of the hairy problems that I think we still need to do a better job on. I also think we can't do it alone. We need to use our partnerships to bend the curve. We at JPYGO are good at things. Other people are better at other things. How do we think about creating partnerships to bend that curve? And I want us to think about that, you know, really when we think about developing our business models, when we think about that return on investment, when we think about scaling up, we cannot think about it. And we have to think about it now in the design process. So just a big shout out to all the partners that have really been in this space. And I couldn't possibly put all the names there. But when you think about those partners, it's you know, people who give us time and energy to think differently. So I picked three, solutions that we've been working on. And the first one is the e-partogram. And one of the things about the e-partogram that I think I'd love to engage you on is the e-partogram today is a tablet. That tablet is about clinical decision making. How can we get the end users to improve our clinical decision making? So when we think about it, I worked on the Dogon Plateau, West Africa. Think about rural villages. Think about people who have midwives that births aren't every day. So that clinical tool that will help them as a reminder, oh, I have to check the woman, I have to check my baby, there are things I have to do to make sure that birth is safe. But how about in that urban clinic where they have rapid births, where you have 10, 15 women, and using the e-partogram as a way to, again, continuously improving on quality. So how do we increase quality of care and address adherence to our clinical guidelines in these different settings? And can we dream of the day that the e-partogram is part of a big data system? So your midwife is putting in the data is sent to the facility, so we people who are using the data are looking at that facility is doing so well, click. We should learn from them, but that facility over there is really struggling with some of their clinical decision-making. How could we spend more time and resources there? How about in the future when that could be part of the DHIS system? So again, this is part of when I think about innovations, I think it starts and you have to see the future of it and you have to continue to prototype and use it. So we actually have been testing this in Tanzania, Zanzibar and Kenya. We've worked a lot with our facilities and skilled birth attendants. So more than 150 people have been utilizing that e-partogram so we could get better better data, better use, and a better system. And now as we take it around, these transformational innovations, they really force us to continue to validate our assumptions and, again, feedback through that end user. And how do we make sure that we're using that data? And I tell you that I think that's another hairy problem is how do we, what is that data telling us? And how do we engage those end users on better understanding that data and how to understand it? And a big shout out to India, who is actually doing some very exciting things with the e-partogram in a new innovation called Osman. We can talk about later. But the second innovation I wanted, so one is a product. The other one, I consider it a new process, a new business model. How many people in the room are thinking about the training that needs to be done for all the healthcare workers around the world? Does anyone lose sleep about this? I certainly do, because every single day there's something new that comes up. Like, how are we ever going to get ahead of that curve? Remember? Bending that curve? Like, we can't just keep on doing classroom training. The cost of classroom training, taking people out of their jobs and putting them in a classroom to learn, like, we have to get on top of our game here. So how could we think about these more targeted spurts of training that would allow people to learn faster, better, more affordably and sustainably. And so this has been a partnership with Grand Challenges, and a big shout out to this lab and Saving Lives at Birth, Laerdal Global Health. And I don't, if you don't know Laerdal, please get to know them. And I know Geeta will be speaking about them more. They're a wonderful private sector company that has worked with a number of us on simulation models. They actually are providing models around the globe. PREFA, which is a local Uganda organization, and the American Academy of Pediatrics. And when you think again about partnerships, each one of those partners are good at doing something different. So partnerships are not about finding people you like to work with. Partnerships are about finding people that you can take your comparative advantage and create a collaborative advantage that, again, is going to accelerate those learnings. We need boosters. I think we all have to think about who is that booster to our problem. Who is that booster to our issue? And I also want to say that we're looking for a number of boosters, too, to help us think through that. So during this lab, we prioritized the needs of the clinical providers to design this more sustainable solution. So we used the providers, and again, we used Laerdal Global Health and their expertise in building anatomical models and simulators. And then we went at it with a local organization in the American Academy of Pediatrics. And through this study, we had substantial reductions in newborn mortality and stillbirths. Thank you. And we're able to improve maternal health both on the reduction in retained placenta and in PPH. And we made sustained changes in those facilities. The last one, many of you who know me, I'm a family planning champion. And I truly believe that family planning can change the lives of women and girls and families. And one thing about postpartum family planning, any guesses here how many births happen globally? 130 million. 27 million in India. 7 million in Nigeria. If we are going to reduce maternal and newborn health, we have to ensure that the births that we are having are healthy births, and that women who want to have births have a healthy birth, and those people who don't want to have births, that they're offered an opportunity to have family planning. And I think some of the work that Nick is doing, and I'm looking forward to talking to him afterwards on his postpartum family planning. In India, 80% of women are sterilized. Why? Lack of access to choice. So how during that postpartum period can you really make a difference is making sure that everyone in antenatal care gets birth spacing counseling. And I want to say that one of the innovations, and it's thanks to USAID, was we tested out a postpartum counselor. Now we have dedicated counselors in all high-volume clinics in India. Thanks to the testing that happened at USAID and the Gates Foundation, but guess what? The innovation here is about the government of India scaling up postpartum family planning. Service delivery, same thing. They created a system. So along with the counselor, they have everyone gets choice, and so that choice is noted. And then we have data dashboards to ensure quality and follow-up. I just want to note that, again, use of data. So what does this data tell me? We have places that is moving high, moving slower. We as a community can have to use our resources. In a way, it's Bihar to spend a little bit more time in Bihar finding out why in Bihar aren't the postpartum IUCDs and other methods being adopted. What can I do there where in other places it's going faster? So again, using data as a way to make good decision making. Last thing is I want to say about India is buy-in and partnerships. Look at the green line is the government of India spend on scaling up postpartum family planning. It happened, though, and a little bit this goes to Nick's point, is at the beginning having a proof of concept that's funded by USAID and other funders can really make a difference. But over time, you show that proof of concept, you show that that dedicated counselor can make a huge difference, you show that A&Ms, our nurses, can provide IUCDs, you prove the model, and then you take it to scale. Look at that financing. For the first time in India, women are being provided birth spacing information and counseling in and provision of postpartum IUCDs. And maybe a dream in the future is to have implants available, and they're not yet available in India. Last thing, and this is my last slide. I just want to say that I think each of us, and I can't wait to the discussion and to talking with you all afterwards, each one of us can make a difference. And these innovations are something that are happening every day in your life and in mine. And I think we just have to think more about it and how we could take those innovations and scale them up in partnership with others. So again, let's deliver on our promises to mothers and newborns, and I'm looking forward to learning more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Monica. I'm not sure what I enjoyed most, experiencing your passion here or seeing Nick take pictures of you all the time. This is great. So, you know, we have had a number of discussions here at the Wilson Center about innovations across a variety of sectors. And we've looked at this in terms of, you know, reproductive health, family planning, maternal health, how do you meet the needs of adolescents, et cetera. And this statement that you made about failing fast comes up all the time. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a concrete example of where you failed fast and moved on? And what did you learn from that? Because, you know, we hear this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, very often when we get colleagues, we say, well, as a community, we're sometimes reluctant to talk about our failures. Mm-hmm. We don't want to necessarily share that with donors. So we have to fail to move an innovation forward. We don't want to keep failing. We want to learn from it. So how do we fail fast? How can we get a concrete example around that? That's a tough one, I know.
It is a tough one. And I think one of the things, I think it's, to be fully frank, and I want to give an example of something that I've done and not something that, somebody else has done, because I think that's, it's critically important. I can't think of one right off the top of my head. I'll give you an example, actually, of I think we fail to use data. So we fail to set goals as a community. And I'll take an example of myself. I failed to set quantitative goals. So we want to reach X number of people. And then I fail to create a hypothesis that is one that really says that if I do X, Y will happen. Because I'm so excited about my idea that I generate my idea thinking, of course, it's going to be a good idea. And then I fail to monitor it. And then it just ends up lingering forever in my investment portfolio. And I keep doing it over and over again. And I tell you, I want to even spend more money. I want to spend more money because I believe in that idea. I fall in love with the solution, yep, not the problem. And so I think each one of us, if we could, at the beginning of this, and I have a number of colleagues in the room, that I just feel like that is the process that we go through at the beginning of the design, that user design, and that the setting of the measures of success. We continue not to do our homework, and then not to be transparent about our decision-making process. And I think if we created cross-cutting teams and multidisciplinary teams that allowed us to do that better, we'd be better off.
And that's great. I think that links to your point about this feedback loop about continuously testing our assumptions as we roll out these innovations. So thank you.